This is Jenka Soderberg. I am in the studio today by Monadel Herzola and Rebecca Tomposki, and I want to just get right into it. Rebecca, maybe you could start. How do you think it's possible for Jewish and Palestinian activists to work together without engaging in what's known as normalization?
That's a great question. Thank you. One of the political possibilities that we've been trying to envision as Jews participating in the Palestine Solidarity Movement is this notion of joint struggle, that we can be in solidarity with the Palestinian liberation struggle and with social movements around the world, and thinking about the different locations that we enter into that work from. For us, thinking about joint struggle has meant being able to be in relationship with Palestinian organizations working on the ground and Palestinian-led organizations in the United States that are envisioning a political future based on equality and redistribution of resources in an egalitarian manner and a joint future for the people in the region living there. And so for us, as the International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network, it's been very important to thinking about engaging in that process of joint struggle in a way that centers Palestinian progressive leadership and is supportive of the kinds of solutions that people on the ground in Palestine are envisioning for a future for all of the people living there.
And maybe I could have Monadel address the same issue. How do you think Jewish and Palestinian activists can effectively work together?
I think it is high time that people that struggle together for peace and justice in the world recognize what we have in common, and the fact that there is a growing solidarity movement with the Palestinian people, most particularly after the Gaza aggression of last year, indicates the fact that Israel, as it claims to be a representative and only voice for Jewish people around the world, is no longer the case. As we know that theoretically, this is what the Israeli, the Zionist movement has introduced that specific state as such, as a safe haven for the Jews. With the last 62 years of severe violations of human rights, we have a growing number of brothers and sisters in the Jewish community around the world and saying enough is enough. You can no longer do this criminal act in our behalf. And we see this as a natural outcome of justice in Palestine.
And I understand that you personally were affected by the Israeli attack on Gaza last year. Can you talk a little bit about your own experience?
Well, my family originally came from a town south of Gaza called Bir Saba. Part of my family emigrated to Jordan, and one part went back to Gaza as a refugee in
1948, during the creation of Israel.
In the recent Israeli aggression against the Palestinian people in Gaza, my cousin of 21 years old, Muhammad, was in fact killed by one of the shells, was attacked by the Israeli airplane. He was 21 years old. He just got married 4 months prior to December, and it was devastating for the family, who one of my cousin used to work also for the UN school that was destroyed by the Israeli military force as well. I think this is only one example of a personal tragedy that symbolizes what took place in Gaza. But the whole population is being under siege right now, and we feel the bond, as each one of them is part of not only the Palestinian family, but the international, you know, support and solidarity against the injustice.
And just getting back to Rebecca, I want to ask you about the Jewish Anti-Zionist Network. What is the network, and what are some of the things that you stand for?
The International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network is a network of Jews whose identities aren't based on Zionism, but on a plurality of Jewish histories and experiences. We're active in many countries around the world, including several countries in continental Europe, the United Kingdom, India, Morocco, the United States and Canada, and have growing chapters in Latin America. Our political principles are first and foremost, as Jews, in being in solidarity with the Palestinian liberation struggle. We're also opposed to U.S. and European domination more broadly in the Middle East, and seek to work from the principles of challenging colonialism and imperialism globally. We support Palestinian self-determination in the different forms that that may look, including supporting the demand for Palestinian right to return. And some of the political activities that we are most focused on at this moment are supporting the Palestinian call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions toward Israel. One campaign that we are engaging in right now is toward the Jewish National Fund, which receives charitable status in more than 50 countries worldwide. The Jewish National Fund has been an organization that receives has government powers in Israel to settle Jews on the land, and has been responsible for the displacement of many Palestinians throughout the history of Israel. Specifically, the Jewish National Fund has been responsible for displacing the Bedouin community of Arab citizens who live inside of Israel, and their lands are not recognized. They're currently being targeted for home demolitions and being displaced from their land. So we have a growing campaign against the Jewish National Fund, trying to target their status as a charity worldwide.
And do you advocate the abolition of Israel as a Jewish state?
We believe that we need to create a political situation where there is a state that's based on a certain set of principles of justice. We don't believe in states that are based on ethnic and religious exclusivity. We don't advocate for the Jewish people who are living in Israel to be removed or uprooted from the land, but we believe that we need to find solutions that are viable for the people living there, and that an ethnically exclusive state is not a principle by which we can possibly stand by. It's not a democracy. We need to challenge this violation not only of international human rights, but of just the principles of democracy and equality that we stand for.
And I'd like to ask Monadel, as a Palestinian, do you think that the kind of vision that Rebecca is describing is something that Palestinians could get behind?
Absolutely. I don't think the Palestinians have declared a resolution for this conflict, recognizing that we could all live together in one historic land of Palestine, Muslims and Jews and Christians. The PLO has introduced such a vision back in 1964 when it was established, prior to the Israeli latest occupation of the 1967 borders. However, I think it takes a lot of work from not all parties, most particularly the United States, who is supporting the state of Israel, a blind support of the state of Israel, one-sided support of the state of Israel. And I think that what require from us both being active in the United States to really take responsibility alongside with all of our allies that make it possible for such vision to materialize.
And again, I'm speaking with Monadel Herzala with the U.S.-Palestine Community Network and the founder and president of the Arab American Union Members Council. I'm also speaking with Rebecca Tomposky, who is with the International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network. And I want to ask you, Monadel, as a trade unionist, What role do you think the worker solidarity plays in bringing about an end to this conflict?
I think that there is a history. There is a history of the trade unionists in the United States that was able to stand up and fight against injustice around the world. We fought against the injustice against the people of South Africa, against the intervention in Central America in the 80s. And now it is very obvious that the issue of Palestine considered to be the issue of South Africa of the 21st century. And with this economical crisis that the American working family are going through, we cannot see that tolerable or acceptable to continue supporting millions of dollars of military support in supporting this entity that continue to murder and criminally, indiscriminately killing people with no minimum amount of accountability for the sole source of support, which is the government of the United States. I think the trade unionists here in this country have to join the rest of trade unionists around the world, in Europe, in Scotland, in part of it, in even in South Africa, to carry on and the same amount of pressure in divestment from the state of Israel, and make it clear that supporting the criminal acts of this state continues to be a violation of all human rights, all mankind, the law of mankind that recognized by the whole world. We want to see Israel accountable to what every other country in the whole of, in the whole world accountable to. And I think the trade unionist is a force that has the potential to do that.
And have you had any response from some of the major unions in the U.S., the AFL-CIO or the SEIU, for this divestment campaign?
Well, I think the labor movement has its own issues as well, and it has own contradictions. But the rank and file members of the different unions have expressed unconditional support for the workers in Palestine. We have had many events in support of workers in Gaza. We have had exchange of delegations, Palestinian labor leaders coming and visit in different labor councils in the country, and also having labor activists going to Palestine and Gaza. Unfortunately, we are not to the level that the AFL-CIO or SEIU to take a bold position and saying this has to stop for many reasons that I'm not, you know, going to go into details on that. But once we start looking at the labor movement truly representing the working families of the United States, of that able to achieve what we are wanted to achieve, a decent health care, affordable housing, decent retirement, and recognize the fact that all these investments is where the money and taxes that the working families are paying for go to those type of social services instead of supporting military occupation like the state of Israel. Once we get that, and I think we will be able to break through and break the taboo that's saying why supporting a military occupation of Israel and continuation of this violation continue to be without accountability.
Now, the U.S. government claims that its support of Israel is in the U.S. strategic interest in the Middle East, and that Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. And maybe I could get a response from each of you on that claim.
I find it hard to believe to see a democratic country in the same time claims to be exclusive Jewish state. It is very obvious that there is a certain laws that exist in the state of Israel that is very obvious, and it's an indication that these laws are discriminating against the Palestinians inside Israel. I'm just wanted to refer to one of them, which is the government discrimination, the powers that entrusted to various government ministries and institutions, including budget policies, allocation of resources, and implementations of laws, results in significant de facto discrimination between Jewish and Palestinian citizens. For example, a report issued by the Ministry of Interior confirmed that Arab municipalities received a fraction of the total funds allocated by the national government per resident to Jewish settlement in the occupied territories and to development towns populated exclusively by Jews. Moreover, the Ministry of Religious Affairs afforded a small percentage of its budget to the Arab Muslims, Christians, and Druze religious communities. Funds for special projects such as the renewal and development of neighborhoods and improvements in education programs, services, and facilities are also disproportionately allocated to the Jewish communities. To date, Israel authorities have rarely used their discretionary powers to benefit the Palestinian minority. So the claim or the myth that continues to claim that Israel is the only democratic country in the Middle East is absolutely false. And it is to the contrary. Israel continues, quote-unquote, security claim will continue to be the dictatorship of Arab regimes that continues to be saving Israel, because the dictatorships are in the Middle East is the close allies of the U.S. government. The Arab masses are the one who will struggle for democracy, will struggle for justice, and will struggle for human rights.
That's Monadel Herzola. And Rebecca Tomposky, could you also address the U.S. government's claim that it is in its strategic interest to continue to support Israel militarily and financially, and that Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East?
Absolutely. My response is, what is another country that you would consider a democracy in which full citizenship is contingent upon ethnic identity? It's not possible for a country that's founded upon these principles to be a place of peace. And I can give several examples of why this is completely hypocritical to consider Israel a democracy. A Palestinian can be detained for up to 6 months without any charges. This is written into Israeli law. A Jew, for example, my friend Jeffrey is Jewish. He has never lived in Israel, and he can return there whenever he wants and get automatic citizenship, subsidized housing, and a variety of other public services to support his transition into living in that country, whereas a Palestinian who can trace their lineage to Palestine for thousands of years can't have the right to return and doesn't have access to any citizenship rights at all. Another example, as I referred to earlier, the Bedouin community, which is an Arab community inside Israel. It's an unrecognized community. It's unrecognized by Israeli law, which means that the Jewish National Fund has the right to claim their land, uproot them from their homes in the Negev Desert. there's no way that a society that's based on these kinds of principles of ethnic exclusivity, a society that's based on citizenship for Jews, can be considered a democracy. And it's no surprise that the U.S. would prioritize their strategic support to Israel, a country that's based on these principles. The U.S. has never shown any leadership in supporting democratization in the Middle East. It's very important for the United States to have Israel as an ally in this region to support its interests in domination of the resources of the Middle East. And so it's no surprise that that the United States would defend Israel as a democracy, because this is very supportive for the United States' overall agenda in the region.
Are there ways in which the Israeli government privileges lower-class Jews who would perhaps want to be in solidarity with their Palestinian brethren?
Yeah, this is a very important question. It's a very complex history, the ways in which Mizrahi Jews were displaced from their societies in Arab countries. There's a long history of Arab Jews living in Southwest Asia, and in most cases very much in peace with the other people that were living there, and their spoken language was Arabic, and they're very embedded in those cultural histories. And as the State of Israel was being built, there was really a need for building a working class inside Israel to construct the state, to build the settlements. And there's a very intense and violent history of looking at how Mizrahi Jews were mobilized through many of the ways in which Zionism mobilized this kind of fear to bring people who were living in Arab countries into the State of Israel. And there's actually actual documentation of bombings of a synagogue in Morocco that the Zionists actually secretly committed as a way to terrorize the Jews living there and inspire a sense of fear that Zionism really needed in order to cultivate itself as an ideology and as a state-building project. And it's true that today many of the far-right parties inside Israel are very rooted in some of the Mizrahi communities. And I think that in thinking about this complex political dynamic, that it can be useful to draw upon the links between today, the white working class, and the ways in which the U.S. government can mobilize in communities that are experiencing different kinds of oppression and privilege, can mobilize those contradictions in ways that help fuel its agenda and encourage those communities to act upon an agenda that's really not in their interests. And so in some of the ways that we're thinking about addressing this dynamic as the International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network, many of our members are from Mizrahi communities, both people who are living in the United States and people living in Morocco and other places in the Middle East, and in thinking about how we can address some of this history in actually really trying to support joint struggle between Mizrahi Jews and Palestinians in the region, and thinking about how we can build support in Mizrahi communities for the Palestinian call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions, and building that unity between Mizrahi Jews and Arabs living in the region.
So you wouldn't be in favor of the Knesset's recent ruling that Arab states should compensate Arab Jews who ended up coming to Israel?
This is another example of Zionism's capacity to really twist history. Many of those, Zionism has been able to write a sort of false history that Jews in those Arab countries were targeted, when in fact, for the most part, they were actually living in peace with their neighbors. There was some targeting toward all minority groups in a lot of those societies, but it wasn't particularly violent. It wasn't actually anywhere near comparable to the kind of persecution that Eastern European Jews were facing at that time. And it actually really doesn't surprise me that Israel would make that claim, especially given the prevalence of people in the far right in Israel that have advocated for different kinds of transference policies for people living in Palestine to be transferred to Arab states, and have really tried to mobilize that kind of wedge between Arabs and Palestinians.
And we are going to have to wrap it up, but I want to ask Monadel to address this. How has the Israeli government been able to use these divide-and-conquer tactics between people who may be natural allies, lower-class Israelis and lower-class Palestinians, for example?
Actually, the Israeli, it was a very well orchestrated campaign to just like you said, to divide and conquer. And people who used to be living in peace as neighbors, and I can only recall this incident. A friend of mine, his name is Ramzi, his mom had to go visit her old house in Haifa, in the Jewish neighborhood. And the family, Ramzi's mom, they're part of a Christian, Palestinian Christian family. And they wanted to visit their old house that was evicted, I mean, and was replaced by a European Ashkenazi Jews. And the woman, she knocked at the door. She wanted to go inside and pick one of a lemon tree that she had. And the European settler will not open the door for her. And she is in her 60s. She was very emotional. She went back to her Jewish neighbor who she's been there for a long time, and she speaks Arabic. And she says, you know, this woman is not opening the door for me. So she was able to go in and tell her, you know, this is the house used to belong to Ramzi's mom. And it shows that how people, they still have this relationship. Things are changing. And I think there is, and like Rebecca was saying, the Israeli government and the Zionist movement is able to twist the fact and fabricate it, and able to even overshadow the fact that there is continue to be Jewish community living in Arab countries, like in Morocco and in Iraq and in Syria, who have in fact sent back the resolution to for the Jewish to come back to their original countries. And I think this is the strategy for Israel. It is the same strategy of the foreign policy of the United States, of Condoleezza Rice, of creating a new Middle East, is actually dividing Lebanon into two different countries, into like dividing Sudan, dividing Iraq, and dividing things. And it's not going to find any other outcome than what the outcome of the British colony in back in the days, the French colony and the Italian colony of the Middle East, who will be able to leave that region. We want to live together, and the continuation of the Israel ability to continue to just be existing by force and by military force, unaccountable, unquestionable, is no longer going to be the case.
Wow. Well, I do want to thank you both for joining us again. I've been speaking with Monadel Herzlah from the U.S.-Palestine Community Network and the founder and president of the American, the Arab American Union Members Council, and also Rebecca Tomposky, U.S. chapter organizer for the International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network.